So we'll go through the church system this time. So we're in section 2, whatever it is, page 5-ish. And we'll have a quick whip through. One or two things have changed, but I'll try and remember them as we go. Okay, I always try and get people to think in terms of signal path. If you imagine the sound takes a direction, so it comes out of someone's mouth, say, into a microphone, down a cable, into the wall, under the floor, down to the mixer, you know what I mean? There's an actual path that it takes. If you can get that path in your brain, it gives you a better idea and a better understanding of what's going on, especially at the mixer end. Okay? So mics and instruments are plugged directly into the wall-mounted boxes on the platform. Now, you've got a little picture there of a platform. There's a box on the left, immediately on the left, behind where the piano was, right? And there's a box either side of the alcove where the drum kit now is. So you know where that is? You know where the drums are now, in the middle of the platform at the back? There's an alcove. It's where the font used to be. There's a plate, a box on the wall, each side of that. Each box has got 8 microphone sockets on it and 2 fallback returns on it. There's also a socket for the drummer's headphones and a spare socket, which I'm going to use to wire the monitors. Next time we have a practice, I'm going to rewire the monitors. You don't need to know that now.
Is this written down somewhere, or should I write that down?
You can write it down if you want. I haven't written down everything because things tend to change. We've changed the wiring on one of the boxes I've just told you about, but I'll tell you a bit more about that in a sec. Microphones obviously just plug straight into the wall where the mic sockets are. But an instrument like, say, the piano or the guitar can't go straight into a mic input because it would overload and it would just distort. The signal that comes out of a keyboard or a guitar is a louder signal than comes out of a microphone. And as the... this is getting deeper and deeper, isn't it? As all the sockets on the platform are microphone sockets, in order to plug an instrument in, you need a box that converts the signal to something more friendly to a microphone input. So it's called a DI box. A DI box simply means a direct injection box. All right. Just pass them around. One's obviously a proper one, and this one's a homemade one. Right? All there is inside the DI box is a transformer. A transformer simply accepts a signal on one end and outputs a different kind of signal at the other. So it changes the sound. It changes the impedance. Actually, is what it does, but don't ask me what impedance is, or we'll be here forever. It's got a high impedance primary and a low impedance secondary. That's where an instrument, the instrument goes into the little sockets on the side, and the big socket with 3 pins in is exactly the same as you find on a microphone. So it just goes, a microphone cable just plugs into that, and then it plugs into the wall.
So what can happen if you plug the microphone through this?
You can't plug a microphone into this. You can't, because the sockets are wrong. Unless your microphone has got a standard guitar jack on it, which means it's a high impedance mic. If it's a high impedance mic, you can plug it in there, and it will work, and it will make it a low impedance balanced mic at the other side. So yeah, it will work. If it's a high impedance mic with a standard guitar jack on, you can plug it into there, and plug that into the wall, and it will change the impedance of the mic.
Some of them say input, though, some of them say output.
Yeah. If you're a guitar player, say, you plug into that so that it can go through the PA, but you then need another cable to go from that into your guitar amp so that you can plug into your amp. So that's why they have a link socket on them. So it's just a loop. And they nearly always give you one socket that's got no earth on it. Does it say that?
Earth loop.
Yeah, that's... Well, earth loops we'll come to later on, but that's to avoid a problem called earth loops. But I think we'll get to that later on. So, I mean, that's roughly what a DR box is. It's just a transformer in a box with a couple of ins and out sockets. Changes the impedance of the incoming signal to a low impedance signal, which is what the mixer likes to look at. That's what the mixer needs to see, a certain type of signal, you see, and that converts into that kind of signal. Now then, the next statement here, the sockets on the wall boxes are numbered to correspond to the channels, or to these, oh, look at this. Is it like that in yours? It is, here you go, we've all got one. This is not quite true anymore. Now, we've got three boxes, one on the left, right, and one each side of the alcove. The one on the right-hand side of the alcove where the singers stand, right, you know that? Where the singers are always on the right-hand side of the platform? There's a box behind them there. The numbers on that box don't correspond anymore to the numbers on the mixer channels. To explain that, our mixer is a Mackie, and it has 20 microphone channels, right? It can accept 20 microphones. But we've got three plates on the platform with about 8 sockets in each. So you see, we've got 4 too many. So we've got 24 sockets on the platform, but we can only accept 20 at the mixer. So we've got 4 strays. And what we've done, and we only did it last week, was we've shunted all the cables down on the mixer so that channel 20 on the mixer is now actually socket number 24. Clear? Clear as mud? I've put a piece of tape on the mixer and wrote the numbers on again, so you know it probably goes up 9, 10, 11, 17 or something like that now on the mixer. So it's just so as you know. It's because obviously the bulk of the microphones are plugged in on that side of the platform. And we have 6 singers over there, don't we? And before we changed the wiring round, we only had 4 sockets available, which meant that cables had to be draped right across the back round of drums and on the other side, which was messy. So we changed it so it's not quite so messy now. It does mean, in effect, though, that the box on the left-hand side of the drummer, as you look at him, doesn't have all the sockets working now. But to avoid confusion, I've stuck a great big piece of tape over all the sockets that don't work, so you can't actually plug something into them because there's tape in the way. From the platform, all the signals from all the three boxes end up going down at what's called a multicore, which is a great big thick cable with lots of smaller cables on the inside, and it runs out of the office and it goes under the floor. There's a wooden floor in St. Paul's. Under the carpet, there's a board floor. It runs underneath and goes to the back where the mixer is, so it's about that kind of size cable, about an inch, perhaps even an inch and a quarter diameter. It takes all the mic cables to the back to the mixer and comes up inside the little box where the mixer is. And they're all coloured yellow, so you'll be able to see them. The mixer, obviously, is the control sensor in point 3. That the mixer is the nerve sensor of everything. It controls everything. The volume, all the microphones, all the instruments, the tone, the send to the tape deck, the send to the loop system, the sends back to the monitors on the platform, all controlled from the mixer. There actually is a second multicore in point 4, which is a much smaller one, which takes signals back from the mixer to the platform. And the reason that that's done, if you imagine we've got microphone signals coming from the platform to the mixer, which are very low-level signals, and they're being amplified a lot by the mixer. And then the mixer in turn is sending signals back out so that it can be fed into the power amp, which drives the speakers. Signal goes back to there and it also goes back to the monitors. And the signal that comes out the desk is quite strong. So if you put these two in the same multicore, there's a real good chance you'll get interference. It's called inductance, really. It manifests as a sort of a high-pitched whine and signals. It's like a feedback and they interact with one another. So the way around that is to use 2 separate multicores, I think, which we've done at St. Paul's. a big incoming one and a smaller outgoing one. So they don't mess about with one another, yeah. There are, I think there are only four signals going down that second multicore. There's two feeds to the PA amp, which obviously are left and right feed for the PA amp, and two for the fallback for the monitors. We use two mixes for the monitors, one for the musicians and one for the singers, two separate ones. Right, the main amp, 0.5. The main amp is a 600 watts per channel stereo slave amp, and it sits in the office. It's a black thing. It's just inside the door, just where the kids can get at it.
I don't mean to be really thick, but not being... Is an amp a speaker?
No. Amplifier. Amp is an amplifier. Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaker is speaker. Amplifier is the thing what makes the noise. A speaker is the thing what delivers the noise. You don't really need to know too much of the technicalities of what it is. You just need to know where it is and how to switch it on. You know, it's got two volume controls on the front. The amplifier drives the two Celestion speakers that are up on the wall each side of the platform, and I've given you a sort of a rough diagram. That's kind of the position they're in. And they're the only two speakers for the whole of the church. So those two speakers have to feed the whole of the church. That's why they're so high. They're high up so that, you know, if you're immediately underneath them, they would blow your head off, you know what I mean? Because they're quite loud. In order to get to the back, they have to be quite loud. So they're up high so that the volume gets fires over the top. It doesn't kill people in the first two rows. The monitor amp. There's a second amplifier. And that's the one that drives the monitors for the musicians and singers. You know, the monitors are those black things on the platform which have got an angled front on them, right? There's a separate amplifier for those, and currently it's on the platform, but as of next week or the week after, it's going to be in the office on top of the PA amp because I'm going to move it. The only thing you need to remember is to turn the things on. We actually have more than three wedge monitors now. We've got four. Steve made us another one. Okay, sound path. You can see from the diagram that having the speakers in that position is about the optimum that we can get from just two speakers. In the main, we don't have that many people in the side aisles. You know, the side aisle on the right by the vestry is used for tea and coffee, and the one on the left does have some seats in, but it's... There tend not to be that many people sit there, unless it's a real full meeting. The pillars, are, of course, a pain in the neck. You know where the pillars are in the church, you know, because they just form a barrier, a big block, you know, visually and audibly. They are big and stone and horrible. Dead spots. A dead spot is where the PA is weak, and you can see from the diagram there, if you were off immediately to the left in front of the office or the right by the vestry, you'd be in what's called a dead spot because the speakers can't physically fire down in that direction. The only other possible aggravation, which I've probably put there, is that the front row and perhaps the second row, but bang in the middle, right next to the aisle, because they're also quite far forward and quite to the side of the speakers. But I've not known of anyone actually complain of not being able to hear. In actual fact, when you're sat on the front row, you can usually hear pastor speaking louder than you can hear him coming out of the PA anyway. So it's not normally a problem. And the mixer's at the back, you all know where the mixer is. You've probably tried to avoid it. I do every week, but it never works. And just as a point of interest, I've marked there that really the mixer isn't in an ideal place because it's off centre. The ideal place would be where the little A is on the diagram, but of course that would bung up the centre aisle, so we can't have it there. There is a reason why that's a good point and a bad point, and you can see by the long arrows reaching from the speaker to the letter A that that's a direct line to the speaker. speakers are actually angled and pointed at that point there. So it's a point where the sound, if you like, from two speakers comes in focus. It's actually called the anechoic line, but you don't really need to know that. It's the most direct line of sight, if you like, and that's where you get the maximum volume and the maximum high-frequency response. To be off where the mixer is now, off-center from that, means that you don't quite hear the same volume from the mixer point as you would do from point A, and you also don't hear the same amount of treble, which can be a problem if you're not aware of what's going on. The loop amp, for those who don't know what the loop amp is, it's a special amplifier that's for people who have a hearing aid. And there's an actual loop of wire runs around the floor. It's under rubber, sort of rubber trunking. It runs right around the floor, around an area of seating. And the amplifier is behind the info desk. And it's a special kind of amplifier that can run into a very low impedance load. What it does, because it's a loop, within the loop, it radiates. I don't know, how would you say that? It sort of radiates the sound, doesn't it? There's a special switch on hearing aids these days that people can switch to, which allows them to pick up this radiated sound direct. And for them, it's a clearer sound than they would get from whatever the microphone is on the hearing aid, because, you know, there must be a little microphone somewhere that picks up sound and it amplifies it. So they can switch over to this other switch, and it's like they're plugged straight into the mixer, the way they get a clearer sound, you know, so it's hearing aid loop. It's actually a pain in the neck because it causes the PA system to oscillate and whistle like stink, but we've got to have it, so we've got to have it. Some point, I'll take you around the church and show you all these things, the actual places, you know. I'll take you and say, that's where that is, that's where that is, that's where that is. So you know. And we'll have a hands-on session at the church on the mixer and stuff like that at some point. Okay, the main switch for the mixer is right by the creche door. Again, perfectly positioned for the little people as they walk in and out. So you have to really keep your... I don't think it's actually ever happened yet, but I mean, how the kids have resisted switching it on and off is just beyond me. But there's an even worse thing, because it's a double power point. You know, there's two 13-amp plugs there, and one of them switches the heater on, which is on that wall, and the other one switches the PA, and the, you know, people go on and go clunk and switch the mixer off thinking it's the heater. Perfectly positioned for every disaster. But we managed to get away with it somehow. The PA amp's in the office. It's a big black thing on the right. You can't miss that. And the plugs are right behind it. The monitor amp will be on top of the PA amp before you can breathe. Right, on to the mixer. Now, I know Duncan's had a look at the actual book that comes with the mixer, but probably the rest of you haven't. In fact, I think Duncan's made a photocopy of it. So, I'll try and talk you through the mixer roughly. I'm going to show you a couple of that. You've got another one of these in your book, but we'll use this one. Just take one and pass them on. Steve's got one, so... The first thing on the mixer to know about is the input gain section. This is probably the most important section of the desk, the input gain section. I'm not sure if the mixer in the church has actually got a mic line switch. I'll have to have a look. Okay, the gain control. The top of the channel is the input gain control. I think it's coloured white. The top of it's coloured white. What that does is applies amplification to the signal that's coming down that cable. Remember, each channel has a corresponding socket on the platform.
Are you looking at the mic preamp?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So the mic is plugged into the socket on the back of the mixer. The first stage it gets to electronically is the mic preamp. And what that does is make the thing louder, and, you know, a lot louder. It's a volume control. But unlike the fader at the other end of the channel, this is a volume control feeding sound into the channel. So from here, the sound goes into the rest of the channel. Mic 7 comes into the socket and is amplified by the mic preamp, and that's the gain control or the volume control of the mic preamp. The signal then passes down into the equalizer. Equalizer is a 3-band bell spec. Even as I'm saying this, I can hear the brain going duh. But just live with it for now. We'll probably have a whole session on equalizers because they're so important. So from the mic preamp, it goes through the equalizer. From the equalizer, it goes down into the next section, which is called the auxiliary send section. Now these are red ones. These are coloured red. And there are 6 of them. And the first two, which you can see in the box there, number one is the volume of the singer's fallback. So that's where you send back sound from each channel to the singer's monitors. And number two goes to the instruments, or musos, as I've affectionately called them. That's the other wedges on the left-hand side of the platform. So that's where you can do you can send back signal from the desk via these controls, and it goes back to the amplifier and the platform and into the speakers.
Yeah, I mean, I would turn up or down.
Yeah.
You send back signal.
Yeah. With the singers, it would probably only ever be turned up. In joke there, Ron, sorry. In joke, sorry. I've never heard the singers yet asked to be turned down. They asked to turn the piano down, or the guitar, but never themselves. So it's a little bit of in joke. Number three, the aux control number three there on the diagram is the one that feeds the drummer's headphones. Okay, number four I think is spare, doing Zippo. Number five feeds the loop system, and number six feeds the cassette machine for recording the preach. And after that section, the sound goes down into what's called the channel fader. Now, you know what they are. They're down at the bottom of every channel. There's a slidey thing called a fader. All right? That is actually the output volume from the channel. So the mic input gain sends signal into the channel. The mic fader sends signal out of the channel. You need to be aware of that signal path because it's very important. From there it goes to what's called a mix amp, which you don't need to know anything about. And then there's the main output faders. The main output fader on the very right-hand side of the mixer, which is the overall master volume, which is the one that offends everybody because it's actually turned on. That's a very rough description of the signal path through the mixer. We need to discuss in the auxiliary send section this two extra switches, which I forgot to stick on there. Diagram, but they're called pre-post switches. Looking at your diagram, auxiliaries 1 and 2, right, don't have a switch at all. They're fixed as pre-fade. What that means is they take their signal before the channel fader, or pre the channel fader. That means if you go oink, 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 oink on the channel fader like this, the monitors don't go up and down in volume, right? Do you understand that? Because the signal is taken pre-fade. So that's a piece of jargon, pre-fade. It's a pre-fade signal. The next two down, auxes 3 and 4, actually have a switch on them, which will switch them between pre-fade mode and post-fade mode. You'll have already worked out if pre-fade means before the channel fader, post-fade means after the channel fader. I just know you all got that before I said it. Post-fade means literally that the signal, these two controls take their signal after the channel fader. Therefore, any movement you make on the channel fader will affect what goes down these controls. There's a switch which switches between pre and post. They're always switched to pre because the drummer's headphones are fed off number 3. And the last thing he needs is to hear you pulling the piano up and down and the vocals up and down on the disc. He needs to hear a constant sound, so the button is always down, so they're always in pre-fade. No, no, no. That's something else again. I haven't put that on either. Now then, controls 5 and 6 are fixed. There's no switch on them. They're fixed as post-fade, right? Which means any movement of the channel fader does affect these. But that's not bad, because one of them feeds the loop amp and one feeds the record inside, so it's not bad that they're affected by the balance you set. The people with their hearing aids need to hear about the same balance that's coming out the speakers. So if someone's singing too loud and you automatically turn them down on the desk, then it goes down in the hearing aids as well. You say, bless them. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the last thing they need is someone going, hey, whoop, you know, and you turning it down and it being very nice in the PA, thank you very much, and the people with the hearing aids are going, you know. It's just different uses for pre and post fade. So 1 and 2 are fixed as pre, 3 and 4 are switchable, 5 and 6 are fixed as post. All right, before we have a chinwag about EQ, the EQ section. Is there anything in that last section which is real unclear? It's okay, go on, ask.
If you've got something obviously feeding back, is it better to tweak the preamp knob or the fader?
It's a good question. It depends where the feedback's coming from. If the feedback is due to monitors, you know, like a mic close to the wedge, then tweaking the preamp cures all of them then, because that turns it down at source. But if the fallback level is fine and it's just tweaking it because it's loud out front, then it's best to move the fader. If you move the channel gain, the mic preamp gain, right, it affects everything. Like, it affects the monitors and the main system. If you just move the fader, the monitors stay where they were. We'll do it. There's a section on feedback we'll get to. So let's take a quick look at equalization then. Equalization really is the secret of the whole PA system. It's the section of the desk where you change the character of the sound, if you like. But it has implications beyond that. Now, you've seen from the diagram at the back that we've got what's called a 3-band equalizer. That simply means that we've got a treble control, a middle control, and a bass control. 3-band. It means you can affect 3 different parts of the frequency spectrum at any one time. You got treble, middle, and bass. Easy to remember. Now, if you come back to about page 4, there's a kind of a graph which illustrates what the equalizer actually does. All right, try and follow me. The center line, which is marked 0 dB, right? 0 dB is the line where nothing's happening. Now, if you imagine on the left of the diagram is bass and on the right of the diagram is treble. Got it? You there? You with me?
Yep.
Left is bass, right is treble. And the line, the 0 dB line, is where nothing at all is happening. So that would be the case if all the controls were in the middle. They're all set in the middle. That's what you'd have, right? Eh?
12 o'clock.
Yeah, to 12 o'clock position. Yeah. There's actually a little click stop in the middle, so you know where you're in the middle. You know, the little control clicks. So the treble, the middle, and the bass control are on the click stops, so nothing's happening. That means the sound's passing straight through the equalizer without being changed at all in any way whatsoever. All right? Now let's assume that we turn the bass control up. Right? If you look on the left of your diagram where it says bass boost at the top, and you see there's a curvy line that comes down towards the center. That's in effect what you're doing when you you turn it full up, like, which is about plus 15 dBs of boost, you're making the bass frequencies louder by 15 decibels. I'm waiting for it to say, what's a decibel? The answer is I haven't a clue.
No, I know what a decibel is.
Do you?
Yeah.
It's just a measure. It's just a logarithmic measure.
A small
head. Right. Yeah, so, okay, so you're turning it up a long way. Obviously, you get most control at the bass end, but as the frequency increases and you get towards the middle, the frequency response tapers off. The effect of the control is less as you get higher in the frequency spectrum. So you get this nice curvy line, right? If you turn that bass control all the way down, you get the inverse of what you just did. So you get the curvy line going downwards, 15 dBs of cut. Can you see it down the bottom? And you get this general shape of a bell. Can you see that? And that's why it's called a bell spec equalizer. Push wonderful, useless knowledge. If you go to the extreme right of the box, to the treble end, I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? You turn the treble control all the way up, apart from killing everybody and it squealing like anything, you would get that kind of a graph from the middle to the right. You would get this nice boost line. Okay? If you turn the control all the way down to the bottom, you get the inverse shape, in which case you get the nice curvy line going downwards. All right, that's the easy bit. Now we have this middle control. The mid-range control does exactly the same, except that there's another control that goes with it. Have a look back at your diagram at the end again. Have you got it? Can you see there's one called mid-gain? That's a volume control. But there's one called mid-frequency. All right, we got it? Mid-frequency. Now, what the frequency control does is it selects a range of frequencies, probably between, say, 200 hertz up to about 3,000, something like that. It selects the frequency range, and the gain control either amplifies or attenuates that frequency range. So you've got a selective amplifier, in effect. Does that make sense? The gain control, like the treble control or the bass control, makes things louder or quieter. But the frequency control in the middle selects the particular frequency that you make louder or quieter. Got it? Got it? Got it? Because it gets worse than this in a bit.
What do you mean selects the frequency?
Well, I mean, it's like... at the extreme left, anti-clockwise, the control, the frequency range is quite low, say 200 hertz, which is like mid-range, low mid-range frequency, bottom end of a human voice, you know, down there. As you turn it clockwise, then the frequency increases. So in its mid-range position, it might be, say, 1,000 hertz, 1,000 cycles. The very right-hand side, it might be 3,000 cycles. So it's a way of selecting a frequency that you want to turn up or turn down. The treble and the bass ones are fixed. You're not getting it.
No, it's a frequency, but what's the difference?
Frequency. It's hard to explain, isn't it? It's hard to explain, is that?
It is. To put it in really simple terms.
Ron's an expert.
Draw a diagram.
That's what I attempted to do here.
A sine wave would be maybe the easiest way.
What would it do if you turned that? Right, if you turned that, what would it do? Practically, what would it do?
The frequency control.
Frequency, yeah.
It shifts the sound.
It's the same as the mid control on the guitar amp.
Yeah. If you've got the mid gain control up,
right,
a long way, and you turn this frequency control, you'll hear the sound kind of sweep almost like a wah-wah pedal. You don't even know what a wah-wah pedal is.
Yeah, I know what a wah-wah pedal is.
Okay, you know what it makes that yeah, sound? Well, you can almost get that kind of sound by this. I mean, all you're doing is running a control. The amplifier is amplifying, but you're just running the sound of the amp from low to high, and it just...
It's fine-tuning,
and it's a way of adding in or subtracting frequencies other than treble and bass. Remember, we talked about preachers last week, and some preachers are voicing like this, you know. One way you can counteract that is to use your mid-range control to find the approximate frequency where that is and turn it down. You can only do it by ear. You can only do it by ear.
You not do that by just adjusting the treble and bass then?
No, because the treble and bass are like, you know, one's that way, one's that way, and you've got all this spectrum in the middle, which they don't touch. That's, I mean, you can see by the curves from the treble and bass, they have very little effect, but, I mean, they have hardly any effect in the middle, so you need another control in the middle there to give you control over this. Well, there's some points at the top that you can read. The middle control doesn't have any effect on the extreme bass. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have any effect on extreme treble, no matter what you do with it.
Yeah.
The same way as the treble control doesn't have any effect on the bass frequencies. No matter what you do with it, it doesn't have any effect on them. It's just a way of giving you more flexibility over the control of the sound. They're all kind of separate. They don't really interact with one another on the Mackie because they're set so far apart in sound terms. The treble is so high and the bass is so low that, you know, they don't really interfere with one another. You can get other kinds of mixes, like I've got one next door which has got a four-band equalizer, and there's certain amounts of overlap on those, so that sometimes tweaking the middle will affect slightly the top end. But not so on this one, because they're so far apart. The actual bass control is fixed at 80 hertz, which is real low. I mean, the bass C on a bass guitar is about 40-ish. 38, 40 hertz, so it's quite low. The treble control on the desk is set at 12,000, 12K, 12 kilohertz, 12,000. K is for kilo or killer. So 12K is the abbreviation. So the treble control is fixed at 12K. The bass control is fixed at 80 hertz. The mid-range I've got here looks around 100. I don't know where it goes, but it's probably from 200 up to around about 3,000. It covers the whole bit in the middle. Now then, as we're into equalizers... Did I do you a diagram of a sort of the building? Can you just have a flick through your diagrams? Because I don't seem to have all the diagrams in my notes. Resonant frequency. You've got a diagram there that says resonant frequency. It should be at the very back somewhere.
This, resonant frequency.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to try and get you to understand the need for an equalizer. Now, if you imagine... You need to understand this. The principle of the way sound reacts inside a cavity or inside a confined space. Every kind of cavity has a resonant frequency. That means it has a particular frequency that it's more sensitive to than any other. Like this room would have a particular frequency that it was sensitive to more than any other. St. Paul's Church would be the same. You know, whatever the frequency might be, I haven't the faintest idea. But if you have a look at your diagram on the top left there, you can see there's a sound source, a big black splodge. And if you were to face in a particular direction and yell, I mean, the sound would bounce all around the place, something like that, but in almost every other direction at the same time as well. And that's why you get that reverberation effect. So as the sound is bouncing around and dying away slowly, that's what reverberation is. But the sound as it bounces round interferes with itself, if you forgive the expression. A sound wave, as Ron said, like a sine wave, imagine a sine wave like this. if it bounces off the wall and comes back on itself, it interferes. Now, if you have a positive going sound wave, that's one that goes up like this, right? And if it meets itself coming back, but by the time it's got there and come back, it's a bit delayed. It's taken a bit of time to get there. So by the time it comes back, instead of being a positive going wave like this, it's a negative going wave like this. If you get those two directly on top of one another, they cancel each other out. It's called phase cancellation. Now, you can never get perfect phase cancellation in a thing, but you can get slight cancellations if the thing is just slightly crossed. And this cancels various frequencies out. And what this does, it gives the room a particular sound. You know, this is a dead room, this sort of hardly anything, but if you go into the end room there and go clap, it'll go zing, you know, you'll hear things zinging out. And the reason you can hear that is because the sound is bouncing all over the place, just for a short time. What happens is that because of the shape of the room, you get boosts at particular frequencies. And I've done a little imaginary room here, right, with these squiggly lines. And I've put 300 hertz, 600 hertz, 1200 and 2400 because they're, you know, there's like they're fundamentals. 300 would be a fundamental and 600 would be an octave higher, and so 1200 an octave higher and 2400 an octave higher. So you get interactions throughout the whole frequency response. But you can see there's the biggest spike is at 600 hertz, right? The reason we need an equalizer is to correct for these room anomalies, if you like. Now, you put the microphone on, especially the tie-clip mic, one of these things, right? You put that on in St. Paul's Church with the equalizer doing nothing, and you'll hardly get a peep out of it before it howls. It feeds back like crazy. You'll hardly get anything out of it at all before it will feed back. What you need to do is find that nasty frequency there and turn it down. So what you do, you use your mid-range equalizer and you turn the gain down and you sweep through till the feedback stops. Then you turn the mic up a bit louder, right? And you sweep, fine-tune the sweep until you get to the point where you can get the mic up quite loud by using the EQ. The reason we need the equalizer is to correct for the sound of the room. Does that make sense? And every room has a different sound, so that's why you need equalizers on mixers. It's also the anti-feedback device on the mixer.
Does the crowd, I would think, make a difference when you don't have a crowd in St. Paul's versus you have a crowd?
Yeah.
You'd have a difference.
Soft, I mean, everyone probably knows that soft furnishings affect the sound of a room, you know, anyone will tell you that. If you put your stereo in a bare room, it sounds, but you put the curtains in, you put the carpet in and the chairs and the sound changes because this stuff absorbs sound, usually high frequency.
If someone's talking, then you can set the frequency and it should stay the same, shouldn't it? You shouldn't need to...
Yeah, barring silly things like people walking dead close to the speakers while they've got the mic clipped on and things like that, you know, I mean, it does happen. Or jumping off the platform and walking down the central aisle and stuff, you know, that can affect things, but more or less it stays the same. Once you've found that nasty one, you've got it. And it's in Paul's, is around about 600. Once you've found the nasty one for the room, and it works on all the microphones and all the keyboards and everything, they all sound better if you turn 600 hertz down. If you have a look at the desk, when you have a look at the desk, you'll see that it's around about there, and it's all turned down. Just makes the thing sound sweeter, because without that, you've got this horrible upper middle hump in the sound. It makes everything sound nasally. So that's the reason we need an equalizer. I hope that's clear, because all of this stuff is really hard to explain.
And all these buttons, these here, are they all exactly the same going along?
Yeah. Every channel is identical. So once you know what one does...
Each one of these lines is what?
It's a channel.
Isn't like a singer or a musician?
It's called a channel. Right. We have 20 channels on the desk for microphones, and they're all identical.
So I'm just
They're all identical. Controls are identical, the switches are all identical. The only thing that's different is whatever's plugged into them, i.e. the microphone or the keyboard or whatever.
And have they all got these aux?
Yeah.
1 and 2?
They're all exactly the same. So once you've mastered one, you've mastered all of them.
Why do you need to have different singers and musician feedback if they're all going to be different things anyway?
Well, it's because of the requirements on the platform. The singers always like to hear their own voice coming out of the monitors. The musicians don't need to hear the singers so loud. No, it's there's this weird phenomenon, right? There's something really weird when you are singing and there's a speaker there, right? Even though your voice is coming out of it loud, to you it's quiet. I mean, it happens to me just the same. I mean, sometimes the singers say, well, I can't hear myself. And you just go by the speaker and their voice is taking your head off. It's loud, but to them, it's quiet. It's partly because they're hearing inside the head, their own voice vibrating inside the head, and it masks out the sound of the speaker. That's not true of the person stood next to them, because they're not hearing that person's voice inside their head. They're hearing that person's voice from there, so they keep saying, she's too loud, she's too loud. It's a strange phenomenon, but it just happens. I mean, the voice can be absolutely cracking your eyeballs coming out of the speaker, but the person who's actually stood by the microphone singing can't hear it as loud as you can.
Yeah, but sometimes when you're doing the acetate, I can actually hear myself better. When I haven't got fallback,
yeah,
I hear myself coming out of those
deep. Yeah, sometimes fallback speakers are a pain. But on the other hand, in some situations, they're absolutely vital. I mean, I couldn't possibly play the piano without a fallback speaker. If I was trying to hear what was coming out the main speakers at the front, there's no way I'd be able to play because, I mean, by the time I played and heard, for one thing, I'd be late. By the time the sound had come backwards and got to me, and then there's no way you can be expressive because you can't hear the different volumes of things.
So this stuff, this stuff, AUX 1 and 2, is the stuff that's chucking out the speakers that's standing in front of the singers and musicians. Yeah. I get it.
So you'll often hear, Carol say, can I have more guitar in the monitor? She needs to hear more of a guitar, so she wants it louder. So you turn up AUX 2 on her channel. And they're labelled, you know, piano, guitar, Carol's what, you know, they're labelled.
Suddenly become clear.
Yeah, it's not so bad once you've been there for 10 years. It's okay. The first 10 are the worst, you know. I mean, this is the mechanics of the PA system, you know, it's knowing where the plugs are, the switches are, knowing roughly what happens with the sound travelling down cables, and that's the mechanics of it. The real trick is standing there and saying, the piano's not loud enough, or that voice is too loud, or that's hurting my ears, or it'd be nice to have just a bit more of this, you know, guitar's a bit too zingy. That happens a lot in St. Paul's, you know, turn a bit of treble off. That's where the artistry comes. You know, you can learn where the controls are. I mean, all of them are labelled, you know, so there's no problem. You can easily find the treble control or the volume control or whatever. It's making the thing sound good, which is the real art, and that comes with practice. But, I mean, you know, you like music, don't you? You like listening to music.
Yeah.
So even just by doing that, it's amazing how your ears will have been accustomed to what is a correct balance. You know, and you know, something goes, oh, or you know, there's someone singing, you know, on the platform who's not really a singer, you know. I mean, you treat them with tenderness and you turn them down so that it's not embarrassing, you know. I mean, it happens a lot, doesn't it? You know? But that's the artistry of the PA, and what we're doing now is the mechanics of the PA, if you like. Oh, yeah, because you can't alter something unless you know where it is, and you can't alter it intelligently unless you know what it does. Don't ask me to say that again. So knowing where the controls are and things is one thing. Knowing what they actually do is something else. And then actually using them in a creative and, you know, double underline, using them in a creative fashion in the church itself, is point number three. And you really need to have a knowledge of all three to be a PA operator. But it's all learnable. The mechanics are easy to learn. It's that artistry. It's making making that mixer work with the guys on it. Because you're with them, you see. I mean, like, if I'm on the PA, say, and say John Burnett's on the piano, Carol's playing guitar and leading and singing, then we're a team. Like, you know, and Carol will speak at this volume and sing at this volume, you know. And you have to compensate for what she's doing. And to put it in the nice way, you have to help her out. And you have to help the congregation out, because either the congregation is going to get killed by a singing volume, or they're going to wonder, what was that funny noise I just heard when she tried to speak? So you're there. It's like a team, you know. She's on the platform doing her thing, but you're on the desk doing your thing. And the two have got to be like this, or it just doesn't work, you know. Like I said last week, you just cannot set the thing up, you know, and do this. You just cannot do that, because music lives. Singing lives. It's up and down. It's in and out. There's light, there's shade. Sometimes on the platform, the guys will play so quiet, you know, if it's like singing in the spirit time or something, you know, and it comes down. Sometimes it's so quiet you can't hear a thing, you know. But that makes the congregation feel insecure. Like I said last week, if the congregation can't hear the piano to pitch to, they don't sing so loud because they feel insecure. And it's, you know, it's like, if they're singing against a nice noise coming off the platform, they can let go. Even if they can't sing very well, they can just let rip, it doesn't matter. But if it's polite and gentle like this, you know, everyone's, you know, because they're embarrassed by their own voices, well, most people are. And things like singing in the spirit and that, you know, they're very timid. People are very timid. But if the piano's there doing this, it gives them something to sit on and they can go with it, you know. But you do that on the PA. Because the guy on the platform is only playing either bang or with his fingers, you know, doing it gently. And that's where the artistry comes in. I mean, Ron knows this because I made a real point of this last week, and I really blooped on Sunday morning, and Ron was there and he caught me out. And I wasn't watching, and I said, you've got to watch, and I wasn't watching, and Martin suddenly started to speak from the piano, and I was and he got it there first hand, and he now knows the importance of keeping your blooming eyes open, because I wasn't watching. And Martin, and I lost the first two or three sentences of what he said, because by the time I thought, that's Martin, hold on, he's on the piano mic. Click the piano mic. Oh, the group's down. You know what I mean? By the time I'd got through that thought process, two or three sentences had come out. So, you know, you have to be on the ball. You have to look. I was caught out. My confessor's here.
It was only because I had your first class.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to do it without that first class.
Well, there you go. There you go, see. There you go. Be sure your bloopers will catch you out. It's so important. I know, the first session of this PA course, I really go over the top about how important the PA is, but it really is so important. It makes or breaks any meeting, any concert, anything. The PA makes it or breaks it. I believe we'll stop there. It looks like the next session we'll go into more detail about the various bits of the mixer, by the looks of it. So have a little read up on the next one. Maybe I'll try and do the next two sessions next week in one go. You can read the notes on, like, for part four. But it covers equipment that we physically don't have at the church. Yeah, much of it you can just read for yourself. So we'll have another session next week, really, on the mixer and the functions of the individual bits. Although we've basically covered most of it, we'll give it another go and try and do the fine detail next week. And then after that, probably it would be good just to have sessions at the church or a session at the church with hands-on, you'll learn much more by actually having the mixer under your fingers and doing and tweaking, won't you? Yeah.